Save big money on protecting your garden now at Menards. Messina's Animal Stopper is a liquid repellent that prevents animals from damaging your garden. Available in a convenient, ready-to-use bottle. It lasts for up to 30 days, regardless of weather and watering. Save big money on Messina's Animal Stopper at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Okay, Tim, good to go when you are.
Cue the music.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into dear Lovejoy.
Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Kooka, spelt quicker, pronounced Kooka, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It's bloody brilliant. Today's podcast is a mailbag special. On this podcast, I'll be giving advice. However, I'm not trained as a therapist or a medic or pretty much anything. So if you are taking advice off me, remember, you're taking advice off a TV presenter, which is a horrible idea.
Terrible.
Mark is here to keep me in check. You just heard him there. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Tim. Hi, everyone.
We've not done one of these for a while, have we? So
no, I almost forgot how to set it up.
Yeah, you did. And you didn't know which cupboard the coffee cups were
no,
in.
No, I did not.
It's all a bit weird. We'll get to the problems in a minute. But first, let's find out what you've been up to, because you've been doing a period of fasting, a three-day water fast, you told me.
Yeah, 3 days, 72-hour water fast.
What the hell does that mean?
It does what it says on the tin, I suppose. You drink only water for 72 hours.
And?
I felt amazing. I lost 6.5 pounds.
Wow.
In 3 days, which was quite good.
Did you put it all straight back on again?
No. And then I carried it. And then because I'd gone back into ketosis, fat burning, I did a strict ketogenic diet for the rest of that week. And I lost about 10 pounds.
You look great. How did it
Thank
feel?
You.
How did it feel mentally fasting for 72
hours? The first night was horrible. I started on Sunday, so I had Sunday lunch, and then didn't eat rest of Sunday, and then didn't eat Monday. But Monday night, I felt a little bit wobbly, but fine. But then I had loads of energy in the evening, and I just found myself doing loads of exercise in the really late at night. And then Tuesday was fine. And then when you wake up on Wednesday, you can eat Wednesday lunchtime. So I just went for a run, did a few bits and pieces, and by the time I knew it was I could eat again, and it was fine.
Do you start thinking about chips and food? And you didn't?
No, and actually I got a bit anxious about eating on the Wednesday lunchtime.
Do you think you could have carried on?
I could have done. Some people do it for 10 days. That's too mad. But 3 days is pretty easy going.
When you go to 10
days. And now I'm doing what, 1 day fast in the middle of the week just to go back into ketosis. And that's hilariously easy now after 3 days.
When you do 10 days, your body's just totally eating itself, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's literally what you're doing. Just your body's just...
And I started reading up about it, and then I read about this other guy, just briefly, I read about this other guy who did... He ate only bacon for breakfast, lunch and dinner for 30 days. He lost 20 pounds. I mean, it can't...
And
this is what I read. Okay, so he went to his doctors beforehand, didn't tell him what he was doing, and said, can you do my bloods? So he got bloods, cholesterol, all that sort of stuff, all those checked. And they said, yeah, not in great health, but you're okay. Then he did this, and then he went back to his doctor and said, can you do my bloods again? I think he must have had a private doctor. And he said, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it.
Really?
You just think, if he knew, he wouldn't have said that, would he?
No, the thing is, when I did the carnivore diet for a couple of weeks, that's just eating meat and nothing else. I just decided to give it a go. Like, I like experimenting. Yeah. And it's great because you don't feel hungry. You've sort of got a lot of energy, but mentally I struggle with it.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
You remember, I was really struggling because I just felt it was unhealthy for me, even if it wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. When I did the vegetarian diet, when I decided to become vegetarian just for experiment for 2 weeks, I just remember being hungry, hungry. Yeah, I couldn't, I just, there's no way, whatever I was eating, I was still going, I'm just starving here. I need
If you just had, I mean, could you have just had like, I don't know, five slices of bread or something.
Well, that's what I ended up doing, just trying to pat myself full of bread and stuff, because I was just always hungry. And I was eating these lovely meals. And I don't know whether it was I didn't give it long enough, 2 weeks, to adjust to the to the diet, but there you go. I went to Japan.
Yes.
That's what I've been to. I went to Tokyo.
Welcome back.
Spent a week there living in Tokyo, which was interesting experience. Some interesting food there.
Oh, go on.
Well, the
I haven't seen you since you've been back.
Okay, so the three meals I had, which were exciting, were one, which was sort of cockles with rice, which is a peasant fisherman's meal. Subtle taste of sort of cockles in rice, which was delicious. The other one was in a pub where it was great. You had to go up two flights of stairs. Felt really dodgy, but they didn't speak any English there, so we had to just sort of like order off the menu, pointing and stuff. And they had pork belly, but they didn't. But they didn't render the fat.
So it's just like jelly, isn't it?
Yeah.
You'd struggle with that, do you?
It was in a sort of watery thing as well. Right. So big lumps of it, huge lumps of it.
If you come from a Polish background like I do, you're very much used to wobbly jelly fat on pork.
And do you like it?
It's delicious.
Right, okay. Yeah. So I ate it and it was delicious, but it is quite a taste. And the other thing was the sushi was room temperature.
Okay.
So we used to, and apparently someone told me when I came back, and anyone can correct me on this, is they like it at room temperature because you can really taste the fish, and they don't want the rice to be all too congealed, so it's like a block. They want it so it falls away in your mouth and stuff like that. But then it's quite hard when you get a big chunk of fish and it's warm.
Lukewarm. It's,
it's kind of warmish. It's quite weird because you're used to sushi being very
quite
cold.
Chilled.
Yeah, so, but I loved it.
But it's okay. So here's what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, or listeners correct me. What you do actually is you don't actually make it with fresh fish because that's quite dangerous. What you do is you freeze it and then thaw it.
Oh, okay.
So if you freeze it for 48 hours, you can pretty much kill anything that might. So when you have it then at room temperature, actually it's not dangerous.
So when the guy was making it in front of us, and we were looking at it, and I was thinking, like, it's very warm. It's because it's been in his hands. It's not. It's because they just like it. And then you look around, and they haven't got it on ice or anything like we would have it here or in refrigerators. But the thing I noticed most was how hygienic it was. It was clean.
Really?
But you know, in the World Cups, the Japanese fans always clean up, don't they, after them when they leave the stands and stuff. But I was intrigued because the public toilets, were also clean, and you know, our public toilets over here are an absolute disgrace. Their toilets are great. They have these, everywhere they have these toilets where the jet comes up, and washes your bum. And to begin with, you're thinking, what?
Oh, great, thanks. I'm going to have to put the E for explicit on this now.
But it's really quite nice. There's nothing wrong with a clean bum, and I quite enjoyed the experience.
I would say there's everything right with a clean.
I can't believe they don't do them. So I came back and checked out. They're quite expensive though, in the thousands, these toilets. But everywhere you go, they've got these toilets and they're clean. They've got like a privacy button on them, so you press it and it makes noises, so that, you know, if you're having
No,
it's like watery type
noises
to give you privacy. But anyway, these things are incredible. And but the toilets say it's so clean. And over here, our public toilets are an absolute disgrace, aren't they? They're hideous. And I wonder what comes first. If we went round all our public toilets and made them all beautiful and nice and clean, would people start respecting them? Or would they just deteriorate dramatically straight away?
I've seen this in action. They recently refurbed the loos at Victoria Station, massive thing. When they first happened, it looked like Grand Central Station, and you're like, wow. And all the buttons are all electric, and it already stinks in there. It's horrible.
So do we not spend enough money on cleaning it?
No, because there's always someone in there cleaning, and you certainly can't blame them for
so
it.
It's just
a lack of
just weird dirty.
It's just a lack of self-respect, isn't it?
Anyway, I thoroughly enjoyed Japan. It was good. I also, when I got back through your recommendation, and we had one of the fellas on the show, one of the actors on the show, went to see 1917.
Oh, who did you have on?
The movie, Dean.
Dean Charles.
Yeah, what's his double-barreled surname?
Yeah.
I can't think what his surname is. Yeah, and it's funny because I went to see the film, and I don't expect too much of movies these days, but you told me it was a good film, and I sat down, and you were so right, because it's done in one shot. You spend the first 10 minutes trying to look for the... cut points.
Yeah, I said don't. Well, no, because I think now the longest actual shot was 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Did we say 1917? We did. Yeah. I thought we'd just gone into...
No, 1917, yeah. Yeah.
But and you do. And there's a couple, obviously, you know. Yeah. You know, when the thing happens and the other thing happens.
But what I found amazing about it was every now and then a film comes along. Like, for the one I always talk about is Blair Witch. Most people go, oh, that's a load of crap, wasn't it? That, for some reason, in my head, made me... I couldn't sleep for weeks.
Oh, really?
Oh, it spooked me so badly. I was in such a bad way from that film. And I was like, I can't... There was just something about the shadows and the handprints and the... everything. It just absolutely terrified me where some other films didn't. This one was so harrowing because I actually... I really struggled to put myself in the part of the characters, you know. Yeah. Or, you know, put myself in what's going on. I'm usually just looking at camera angles and stuff like that. I suddenly started thinking, shit, people were really standing there with guns. They were really shooting at each other. You know, we've been so sanitized from war now, haven't we? Like, it's a drone. Mm. And no one needs to worry about it. The drone just flies over somewhere and kills someone or does whatever. This was like, so I felt myself really getting into it. My heart...
It's very immersive, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the good word, immersive. My heart rate was going, just constantly through it. But we're so far away from that now, aren't we? Don't you think?
As you say, drones, yeah. I mean, you don't need to... trench warfare now. I mean, because you think when they first went into that war in 1914, they went on horses and... You know, they had, and that war was like the birth of proper mechanization of war. You know, they had very simple planes that they used to use for mapping, but by the end of the war, they had guns on them. You know, it was all happening. So they went in red trousers and no helmets. You know, it's mad. And by the end of the war, it was like it was closer to the Second World War. They had like very early
tanks.
There
was no communication, so people were signing up thinking they were going to have an adventure.
Oh, it's the worst.
They didn't realise what was going to happen.
We looked at war very differently back then. Very differently. It was a very different culture around war. It was a thing to be proud of and a thing, it was, you know, part of your sort of national pride.
I'm going to sound so ignorant here, but there's someone, that is a philosopher or something, I'm not sure, who said that the button for the nuclear weapon for Trump or whoever the president is, should be actually inside some human's body. So if you want to press it, you have to kill a human, cut them open to press it, so you actually know about the death before you actually do it. And I thought that's such a great idea because it's so easy now just to play
war games. Yeah.
Sitting there going, I'll just send a drone over because no one dies, just do that. But yeah, I loved that film. I really recommend it. If you want a good film, And I was also proud to be... British, the amount of acting, the great actors in it, who just play little cameo roles. They just pop up, do like literally 2 minutes of acting, and that's it, just in the thing. And it's like, it's brilliant. I loved it. I really did.
Yeah, it's a really...
And talking about war, you told me on Netflix to watch The Devil Next Door.
I did, yes. And you did?
Mm.
Oh, man, that's hard, isn't it?
Hard watch that. That's the Second World War.
Maybe just to quickly, for people who haven't... heard of it, it's there was a story that they suspected this guy who lived in somewhere in America, I can't remember where it was.
I can't remember.
They thought he might be one of the nastiest
concentration
camp like guards who used to... Ivan the Terrible, that's, you know, I mean, clues in the name there, isn't it, a little bit?
He was sadistic around the gas chambers.
Yeah, used to beat people as they went in and laugh at them.
Stab them with bayonets and everything else.
And so it's the sort of build-up and trial and all sorts of other stuff going on around that case. And it's a very hard... It's a very good watch, but it's extremely hard.
Yeah, it is. But there's a lot of those around at the moment. I watched that one because... And again, it hit me emotionally because I'm like, crap, this stuff really happened. It's like we are so removed from it all that I think we should be made to watch it all every now and then just to realise the terrible things that humans do. The only problem with all the real crime stuff, though, that's happening at the moment is... There's a lot of this out there. And they used to make a documentary if there was a great conclusion.
It's almost...
Podcasting.
Yeah.
It's like we've got no conclusion. What's that thing? What was it called? I can't remember which one.
Serial.
Serial. That was the first one. Serial. Everyone tuned into Serial. It's like, But where's the conclusion.
Yeah.
No conclusion. And then since then, just here's doesn't a story matter. And there's no conclusion to it. It's bullshit.
There was a conclusion.
To Devil Next Door.
There is a conclusion to that.
It's whether you agree, it's whether you, what side you're on. So many of these things that I just literally don't watch now because I think, oh, am I going to find out anything or not?
Well, it's very tempting as well with those things. Just to look it up online and see what happened before you finished it. Yeah. Especially if you're not enjoying it.
Yeah, that's what I did.
Do you know what? Actually, I'm just going to see what happened because I can't watch any more of this.
That's what I did with Titanic when I found out it was a true story.
You found out it was a true story. How far into the film were you?
It's a joke, Mark.
I don't know with you, Tim.
It's a joke.
It's your delivery.
Yeah, exactly. Should we do some problems? Or have you got anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you've been watching on Netflix, by the way?
Because I started Messiah. I got a few episodes into that and I might give it another go. It was a bit, I don't know, it was fine.
What about anything on that?
To be honest, what happened to me over Christmas was that I discovered that Seinfeld was on Amazon Prime and I haven't watched anything else since but that.
Really?
And I'm now on the eighth season.
I'm not finding anything I want to watch on Amazon Prime.
No, it's not brilliant. It's not great for that sort of stuff. No. Netflix is much better.
Yeah. Though Netflix are struggling, aren't they?
I use the delivery thing for work. It's so good for books and bits of tech that
I need. They can't fill up Netflix quick enough anymore, can they? That's why there's a lot of cooking stuff.
Oh my God, isn't there? And when you're trying to watch what you're eating on a diet, what you don't want to do of an evening is sit down and watch people eat burgers and chocolate.
I don't want to slag off my career here, but it's cheap TV, isn't it, making cooking stuff? You just like... fill up hours and hours of hours and hours of TV with people cooking stuff. Right, let's do some problems. This first one comes in from Helen, who says, Helen Curran, actually, who says, if you could only have one last meal, what would it be? Now, this I love this because it intrigues me because people have always said this. You got one last meal, what would it be? Or you're about on death row. The last thing I would think about is eating. The last thing, if you're on death row, I'd never get my head around that.
That's a very good point.
Like, you're on death row, you're going to die tomorrow, Tim. What do you want? I don't give a fuck. Excuse my language. I'm going to die tomorrow. I don't give a shit what I'm eating. Oh, yeah, true.
You're right. You're right. I've never thought of it that way. I've always gone straight to.
Go on.
Some food. Yeah, no, I've always thought about.
What would you say? Some Polish fatty pork. Yeah. It's just such a bizarre scenario, isn't it? You're about to die. What am I going to eat? And that there just goes to show how absolutely obsessed we are with food. Mental. I can't get my mind off this. I just can't stop thinking about the fact that most.
I mean, it is a sort of not a rhetorical question, but it's one of those questions where basically it just means what's your favourite dinner.
Yeah,
it's not. It's like Desert Island Discs. Which eight records would you take? Well, I mean, that's the last thing I'd think about.
Desert Island. Yeah, I suppose you're right. But they do it when people are on death row. They do get a last meal, don't they?
I don't think they do anymore. I think that's a bit of a myth.
Is it?
I think so. Uh-oh.
I'm Googling.
Oh, no.
Tim is Googling on the internet. Looking for information to fill up his head. To fill up his head, or just to fill up the time. Whoever get the feeling.
These are not sound effects, this is really Tim. What did you type into Google?
I got, do death row prisoners still get a last meal? In the United States, most states give the meal a day or two before the execution and use the euphemism special meal. There you go. So they do.
Oh, they
still
do get those. All right,
so they still do it, yeah. Okay, so I've got some here for you. Do you want to hear some? This is some European ones. Oh, that's 1817, 1916. We need some more up-to-date ones. Let's go to America because they're up-to-date there. They're up-to-date with their death. Adam Kelly Ward, who was a murderer in Texas, 2016, died through lethal injection. He had beef soft tacos, Spanish rice, salsa, mixed greens, corn, refried beans and flour tortillas with a choice of water, tea or punch to drink. So surreal. You're going to die and you care about that. Aileen Eileen, sorry, Warnos, serial killer, Florida, 2002, declined a special meal but had a hamburger and other snack food from the prison's canteen. Later, she drank a cup of coffee.
Wow, we've gone. It's quite a bleak start to our podcast this year, isn't it?
Do you
want
to hear about? I'll do one more for you.
Come on, then.
It's quite funny. Alan Lee Davis, 1999. It's not funny at all, by the way. Murderer, executed in Florida. Electrocution. Oh, that doesn't sound like a good way to go, does it? I'd rather the lethal injection. He had a 350-pound tiny Davis. Oh, sorry, 350-pound tiny Davis was what his nickname was. He had one lobster tail, fried potatoes, half a pound of shrimp, fried shrimp, 6 ounces of fried clams, half a loaf of garlic bread, and 32 ounces of Barks root beer. That's a lot of food, isn't it?
Yeah.
To be eating. I could go on all day. Who's interested in this? Shall I do more? Shall I give up?
You wouldn't get this on Sunday brunch, would you? On a Sunday morning?
No. All right, I found one in 2000. Edmund Zargosi, 2018. That's probably the most... in Tennessee, he was a murderer and he got electrocution. He had pickled ham hock and pig's tails. There you go. I'm stuck on this. I've gone down a wormhole and I literally could read this probably all of them all night long. But I think we might lose some listeners.
Yeah, it's a bit grim. Anyway, what would your last meal be? Should you have an appetite?
I just wouldn't give a damn. An apple. I don't know. What would yours be?
I don't know. I've never really given it quite... I don't know, maybe a burger or something.
Right, I tell you what, I'm coming through...
It'd have to be low carb.
Generally, in America, they eat... Yeah, I'm in ketosis.
I don't want to come out of ketosis.
I don't want to come out of ketosis. Yeah, diet. They're all eating filet mignon steaks, either burgers. They're eating things like T-bone steaks, lobster tails. It's all stuff like that. Catfish, fried catfish. It's all that sort of, what do you call it? That sort of food, you know, that sort of like snacky type, you know, American food. Right. Okay. So there,
wow. Well, that was a,
let's go to the next one. Right. Emma says, my husband has just left me and the kids. What's the first thing I should do? This was on Twitter, by the way.
Left the family or left the house?
Left the family.
Oh, right, okay.
My husband has just left me and the kids. What's the first thing I should do? I said, find peace, realize you can only control you and not him, and understand you are more important to you than he is. I think this is what's really important about life, is learning what you can control and what you can't. And literally there's only one person you can control, which is yourself. You cannot you can try and control other people, and there's plenty of people out there doing that, Mark, but generally you can't control anybody else and their thoughts. And so you have to kind of, this goes the same for everybody who's had a relationship breakup recently and who's suffering with it and feeling sad about it. You can't control what they think, and what they think is pretty irrelevant to you. And also, you are the most important person in your life, not them. So you have to worry about what you're thinking about yourself, not them. I know it's easier said than done, but this is something you have to do. The kids need you in this case, but once they've left home, you're on your own again. I'm not sure that's the nicest thing to say, is it? But you are on your own again, so you have to just kind of learn to love yourself. It's very cliche what I'm saying here, but you know. And the other thing you have to remember, which is something Catherine Mannix said on this podcast many moons ago. She was discussing death. The problem with death, and every time a relationship ends, it's like, you know, it's late at night. We're doing this late at night. What's the word I'm looking for? You have to mourn.
Yes, I was going to say go through a period of grieving. Same thing.
Grieving.
Yeah.
You have to go through a period of grieving. And as Catherine Mannix pointed out on this, it's the grieving process is because nothing will ever be the same again. And that is the problem, because you want things to be the same and they won't. And that's when you get your head around that and you accept it, it's never going to be the same again. You've got something new to do. Move on with it. Look after yourself and don't try and control what they think. Don't spend too much time trying to think what they're thinking as well. It's up to them to think what they're thinking. You've got to get on with what you're thinking. And it's really blooming hard not to think about what other people are thinking, because we're obsessed with that little voice in our head constantly going, what's everyone thinking? Hey, I listened to something brilliant the other day on a podcast. When you're a baby, you just act totally on, you know, your conscious self, instinct.
Yeah.
Because you don't have that voice in your head, because you don't have the speech. So that is it. When you become a child, you're taught that who you are is what people is how people are perceiving you. So you look in the mirror and you start going, well, I am that person that they think I am. So you become an adult and you're standing there going, oh, I am. So you spend all your time on your looks and what you're saying and what you're thinking and what you're projecting, because you think that's you, how everybody else is perceiving you. Yet the only time you can actually really see you is when you look in the mirror. So it's not who you are. In the world, who you are in the world is what you are. Who you... That was going so well.
Was it? You lost me about 10 minutes ago.
You are not how everyone else perceives you. You are just literally who you are. I keep using the word literally today. It's terrible. You are just who you, but I'm using it correctly. So it is just who you are. So you are, stop looking at me like that.
I can't, mate, I'm just... I'm having flashbacks of that mailbag a few months ago when you started going about red velvet or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you dug yourself into terrible mind hole.
I've got some words coming up soon. You'll love them. Got some great answers. Right, I'm moving on. You get what I'm saying. I'm moving on. Right. Daniel says, good afternoon, Tim. I'm going to sneeze.
That'll make more sense than what you just said. Oh, that was loud.
Right.
This is a shambles.
This is a shambles. Dear Tim, good afternoon, Tim. Not even sure if you're going to read this, Tim, so I won't bore you with glorified introductions. It's not my style. This is an advert, by the way. This ends up being an advert, but it's quite a good story anyway. I have a story. I'd like more dads to read it or listen to it, and thought you might be able to help. My story. So there I was. I'd left the Royal Navy and I was about to transition into the unknown after devoting 13 years of my life to Queen and country. At the same time, I was starting a new business and was about to become a new dad. I was anxious about a lot of things. Would I adjust to life in the civvy street? Would I be a good dad? Would the business make enough money to put food on the table? It was a nerve-wracking time. My wife Charlotte was overdue and by 2 weeks, and I'd hardly had any income coming in. Then when I thought life couldn't get any more stressful, Charlotte went into labor. There were complications. We were rushed into theater for an emergency C-section. Not the lovely romantic birth we'd hoped for. We ended up spending 5 days in the hospital with our newborn daughter, and she had developed an infection during the delivery. Traumatic times. I was an emotional wreck, but couldn't express it because I'm a dad now. I'm the man of the house, and I have to be strong for everybody else. This was the narrative that was playing over and over in my head. Eventually, I got a job in exercise rehabilitation for the Ministry of Defence. I felt ashamed that the business hadn't been profitable. I'd invested so much money and was in debt because of my naivety, and felt so much guilt that it hadn't worked. Now, I was working away from my family and having to travel most weekends. And the phone rang one day and it was my dad. He didn't sound too good and wasn't able to speak clearly. Son, he said, I've got cancer.
Jesus.
We'd only just rekindled our relationship. As for years, I'd held a stupid grudge from my childhood, and now I realised I didn't have long left with him. My life started to spiral out of control. I started self-medicating with food to help myself feel better. And despite working in the fitness industry and being educated in the principles of health and well-being, I found my waistline expanding rapidly. I've got a theory. I know people say that you eat food because of the serotonin or something. It sets off the reward thing and gives you a bit of a buzz of a happy thing in your head, and that's why you do it when you're sad. But I also think a lot of people feel their sadness and their pain down in their stomach. Do you have that? I definitely have it.
Oh, when I'm stressed, yeah.
And I think a way of trying to control that is you try and put stuff in your stomach.
Oh, okay.
And I this could be absolute bullshit, but that's my latest theory on it. That's why I think a lot of people overeat. Binge eating felt good, he says. Anything was better than feeling the way I did. I stopped being conscious of what I was putting in my mouth and didn't realize how out of shape I was getting. By the time I'd realized I'd eat enough roast potatoes to feed a continent for a year, I'd gained 3 stone.
Wow. Yeah.
That is a lot of weight. I was, especially somebody who's doing physical, you know, a job with a physical job. I was out of shape both physically and mentally. I knew something had to change. Started with one thing, has always been a philosophy of mine. This is good, this, right? So you've got to listen to this guy because I think he's got some good advice here, has Daniel. I'm a great believer in starting with something manageable, especially when it comes to fitness. That way you can build consistency, momentum. That's what I said, you see. I was telling everyone, just go to the gym for 20 minutes. Everyone can do 20 minutes, but stop on 20 minutes so you never think it's becoming a burden for you. But anyway, he says this. I thought about how I want my daughter to perceive me as she grows older. Kids love their parents regardless, but respect is a different thing altogether. Brilliant advice, that. The gift you should give your children, two gifts, is attention and give them an example, a good example. So don't spend your whole life in misery, sacrificing your life for your child, because if you do that, the example you're setting your child is one that they should be spending their life sacrificing for the next generation. What you should be doing is having a great life, really enjoying yourself and setting an example to your children. I mean, like, work hard and bring in money and do stuff like that, but also make sure you're not just having a terrible life, sacrificing it all for your children. It's a narrative that I think we're all doing as parents at the moment. Who can sacrifice more for their child? You know, becomes, you're the hero because you're, look how much sacrifice I'm doing. Oh, I haven't had a weekend to myself in 2 years. It's like, well, have one. Show your kid that you can have some fun. Show them that life's great when you're an adult. Anyway, I was out of shape, but I've got to that bit. Kids love their parents regardless, but respect is a different thing altogether. Yeah, exactly. Make them, you know, let them have something to respect. I wanted her to respect me for keeping in shape and practicing what I preach. There's nothing worse than a hypocrite. Kids value being shown what to do more than being told what to do. Yeah, I agree with that as well. I had to be a good role model. I wanted to promote a positive body image to my daughter, and then I needed to sort myself out. So I started walking. I walk most mornings for around 30 minutes. If you walk a decent pace, you can burn between 300 and 350 calories doing this daily for 10 days. I burnt the equivalent of 1 pound of fat. I then started to introduce kettlebell workouts into my day at lunchtimes before I saw my afternoon patients. Then I started to track my calories and protein for a few weeks to make sure my portions were only enough to support exercise and my activities of daily living and nothing more. Yeah, you got to get yourself in a calorie deficit, don't you? Mm. That's basically how it works, right? But what's the difference between that and ketosis then? So you get yourself in a calorie deficit, but if you're doing ketosis, you're just trying to get your body
70% to get into ketosis is to mean you're burning fat, not glucose. So you have to have 70% of your calories from fat.
Right.
10 from 20 from protein, 10 from carbs.
But are you on a calorie deficit as well doing that or not?
I expect, because you just by the very nature of it, you're not eating as much, are you? If you're having steak and salad, you're not having steak, salad and
chips. So what do you eat then to get into ketosis? Oh, I know you fast to get into it. And then after that, what are you eating? Just no carbs?
No. I'm eating things like beef, mince and eggs and cheese and cream and salad and broccoli.
Sounds good.
It is good.
Anyway, the walking really helped me mentally process what had happened over the past few years. I tell you what, that is another great bit of advice from Dan here. That walking is just, if you're ever feeling crap, the one thing you can do is get out, go for a walk, get out in nature, go to the river, go to the woods, go to the fields, go anywhere, even when I walk around the town, just getting your body walking.
When I'm working from home, so I'm not at yours or at Chris's or whatever, or, you know, writing, I have a run in the morning, get myself pumped for the day to work.
Yeah.
And then after lunch, I go for a walk.
Yeah.
Just around the town, as you say. You don't have to have a lovely park bike. Yeah. If you've got a park, that's nice. But just go out and walk.
If you're having problems with your partner, go for a walk to talk about it. If you're having problems with your kids, not that you'll probably be able to get your kids out away from their mobile phones or whatever, but if you're having problems, go for a walk.
Mm.
And walking alongside someone is also a great way of doing anything, business or... did we discuss that with Paul McGee?
I think possibly we did. He said, didn't he say go for a walk?
Yeah, I think that's one of his things as well. Yeah. Walk and talk, yeah. It's a really good idea for... he's coming back on soon.
Oh,
Paul.
Cool.
I love Paul. He's got a 10th anniversary of his book about confidence. So he's coming back on to discuss that. It's a great book. I've been reading it, actually. Anyway, I started to talk to other dads facing similar challenges. I realized that for many, the main obstacle to getting fit was actually fear and anxiety. They were scared of being judged in the gym, embarrassed they might be doing it wrong, and even worried that they would look ridiculous in front of their own families. You had that? Ever gone into a gym and felt...
I don't do gyms, really.
Don't you?
I don't... You can do everything else without going into a gym, can't you?
Yeah, but I think gyms are good places. I really do, because it focuses you. And if you've got somewhere to go, which is nice, and, you know, as I say, don't do too much going there. Anyway, so here's his advert, and it's worth it because he said so many decent things here. So I set up a support group for dads in the UK called the Super You Project. There are now more than 800 dads involved supporting each other online. That's a great idea. This inspired my new book, Start With One Thing, which is a step-by-step guide to help dads make the best decisions to maximize their fitness and fat loss journeys. It's very easy to put your own special health and well-being aside when you become a dad and you feel a huge responsibility on your shoulders. What I now know is, in order to be the best dad, I need to be the best Dan.
I like that.
Yeah, that's on his t-shirt, I imagine. You get that. Dads matter too, he says. If you reply, thanks so much in advance. I haven't replied, Dan, but I put you on the podcast. That's great. So it's called the Super You Project. There's some really good advice there. And if you are a dad and you want to, you want some support and you want to try and get fit or want to try and lose some weight, I'll give that a go. I wonder if she lets mums on there as well, because it's a good thing for mums too. So, yeah, it's good. Anyway, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. Back in a bit.
Turn on the cooker. Cooker spelt with a Q U. Turn on the cooker and instantly make a brew. Turn on the cooker. Cooker spelt with a Q U. Turn on the cooker. Hot water for vegetables too.
Yes, this podcast is sponsored by Cooker, spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker. 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Does your normal hot water, your normal cold water. It does 100 degree boiling hot water for all your brews and your vegetables and your rice and your pasta. It also does chilled filtered water, and it also does chilled sparkling water. Woo-hoo! Which we love. Thank you so much for sponsoring the podcast. I think it truly is a great invention in the kitchen. I love it. Can live without mine now. Invented in the 70s in Holland, no less. Brilliant invention.
Yes, very good. And Tim, would you like to hear a very good use of boiling water?
Yes, please.
But it can relieve nasal congestion if you breathe it in. There you go.
One of those. That's the steam, isn't it?
Exactly. So yeah, there you need boiling water.
You need boiling water to get steam to release.
It also, if you drink hot water, it aids digestion. There you go. Two for the price of one.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Cooker. Okay, on with the podcast. Aaron says, do I bleach my hair blonde all over or leave it, Tim? Help me out. Okay, my response to him is, if you can't decide about something, I've said this on the podcast a load, so I might as well, it's the new year, so I might as well say it one more time. Anything you can't decide about, wait 30 days. And if you're not clear by, you'll be clear by then, honestly. 30 days later, you're going, nah, I don't want to do it, or yeah, I really want to do it.
30 days is a long time. That fashion might be over then.
Yeah, 30 days is a long time in fashion. But, you know, just try it with everything. I would say, though, changing your hair is a fantastic thing to do if you want to get noticed. If you're just slightly bored at work, or in my career, the amount of times I've thought, Christ, I need people to notice me, do something stupid like grow a big white beard was the last time I did it. Shave your head, bleach your hair, grow it long, I've done all these things, and every time I do it, one day I was like, right, I need to try and get a bit more work, I need to get noticed. So I just wore double denim on the show, and you just know the reaction. Twitter goes mad, oh, no, left his man double denim, and then people start going, Tim Lovejoy, didn't think about him. Just got to get yourself trending, so think about it in that way. So yeah, if you want to get noticed, you want to change, might not like it, but it doesn't matter, it's only hair, you can grow it back. Well, not in Mark's and my cases, you can't, but you can. But
I could, it would just be very patchy.
Every single decision, though, if it's a tough decision, wait 30 days and then make it then. Okay, here's one. This comes from Sam. He says, is it better to rise early or sleep late? Now, another one. These are all Twitter ones, by the way. This is what's filling up the show today.
Interesting.
What, do you know what? Let's ignore the question because it's a bit dull. But
that's it. You encourage those people to write into.
Just want you to know, you need to get between 7 and 9 hours sleep a night as an adult, please. That is the important thing. And it's the new year, so you've got all these people banging on about exercise and banging on about diet and all these things. Sleep trumps both of those by an absolute country mile. Sleep is more important than exercise and diet. Let's face it, you don't spend 8 hours a day exercising. You don't spend 8 hours a day eating. There's a reason for that, because it's not as important as sleeping. Remember, we used to be animals out in the wild. So the idea that we had to sleep between 7 and 9 hours, it's ridiculous. That it's a real threat to us, but that's apparently why our brains have become so developed, in my case. You need to be able to sleep. So I listen to all these people who are saying, I'm surviving on 5 hours sleep or something. We did this as one of our first ever podcasts, didn't we?
We did, yeah. Dr. Mia Krieger.
Dr. Mia Krieger said there is no such thing as being able to survive on less than 7 or 9 hours sleep. If you're not doing that, you're going to get ill. So many illnesses from it, including, you know, they link it to things like
dementia
and Alzheimer's and things like that, but also heart problems, cancer problems and everything. So, you know, make sure you get your sleep. That's the most important thing. So whilst you're out there going, oh, I need to go and run a marathon, or oh, I've got to go into ketosis or do a vegan diet.
This wasn't a personal attack, was it, Tim?
Wasn't actually, because I know you sleep well. Actually, how's the fasting help your sleep?
Amazing. Mm. Absolutely amazing.
I always find that the CBD oil does it for me.
Yeah.
You don't like it, I know. It didn't work for you. But for me, the CBD oil, every time I'm finding I'm starting to ruminate a lot at night or wake up in the night, if I start the CBD oil again, it only takes me a week or so before I'm back to 7 to 9 hours.
Because if I'm not out or working or anything, I like to get to bed really early. And with the fast thing, what I found was that I couldn't sleep till late because I had so much energy. But once I fell asleep, it was solid, like proper 8 hours solid, no breaks whatsoever, which is quite unusual for me because I'm a bit of a tosser and a turner, Tim.
I've listed the order of things for you. Number one, things that as a human you need to do. Number one, I'm putting it as breathing.
Fair play.
Number two, I'm putting as water.
Fine.
I'm forgetting the sort of survival techniques.
Netflix, things like that.
Because I'm forgetting Netflix.
Phones.
Phones, yeah. And I'm forgetting those survival things. Where, you know, the making sure you get the sort of a roof over your head. I'm assuming that everyone's got a roof over their head who's listening to this. Okay, so breathing number one, water number two, sleep I'm putting as number three.
Sure.
Then diet, which is food, as number four. And then exercise as number five, I'm putting down. There's your order. So sort out your breathing first. And I'm not being flippant there. We've got to learn how to breathe properly, all of us as well. Make sure you're not doing too much shallow breathing. Make sure you're getting good breaths in. Make sure you're hydrated with the water. Sleep, very, very important. Diet, good. Make sure it's nice and healthy. And then plenty of exercise. You only have to do 20 minutes a day, I promise you. Just do that. You'll be fine. You'll look great and you'll start changing with just 20 minutes a day. This one says...
Can I jump in very quickly? Because I wanted to ask some communal listener advice from the listeners. Has anyone got any good ways of helping me breathe while I'm running? Because I cannot do it.
What do you mean you can't?
Well, no, because sometimes I'm not able to get into rhythm. Sometimes I've realised I'm not breathing. And then I have to put loads of effort into thinking about breathing. And then I forget. So if anyone knows of any good techniques or any websites I can read, because I've looked it up and I don't know how to do it.
I've never heard of that. I know that people have problems breathing with...
Sometimes it used to really, swimming. Really make my brothers laugh. We'd be sitting there watching telly... And then one of them would just go, oh, for God's sake, breathe. And I go, oh, yeah, sorry. I just hold my breath. So I don't know. Anyway, if anyone knows,
if anyone knows
any good running techniques,
yeah, you can email us at dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. Okay, Hawkeye Phil says, who is the one player Chelsea need? I kind of ignore a lot of the football ones, but I thought I'd get involved in this because Mark is a Liverpool fan. I feel so sorry for Mark because the season that Liverpool win the league, it's the VAR season, the VAR season, and no one's going to take
Liverpool.
It seriously. No one's going to take it seriously, Mark. It's like, you know, it's
Champions League, World Club Cup, possibly the Premier League.
League's what you want, Premier League, and you've won it. You basically won it, but it's the VAR season. Never mind. But anyway, he asked a question about which player Chelsea
needs. You're such a jealous weasel.
and I said to him, it's a team game. And then I thought, well, it used to be. And I can see it's now about individual players because of marketing. However, I've been discussing this with Mark, really, actually, because it became for a while just purely individual sport. Remember, it's like, it's Ronaldo versus Messi.
Well, that's what they do, isn't it? Because they have to have a picture for Sky or BT or the paper or the betting.
It's also
thing.
Yeah, go on.
So it's always Mo Salah versus, you know.
But it used to also be with the marketing. You know, so they at one stage they like Adidas would go, okay, our market will, you know, we'll sponsor the team. You know, and they still do the shirts. But then the boots are the most important thing. That's what they wanna sell in. And then with Nike came Michael Jordan and they put all their money on Michael Jordan, who was gonna be an Adidas star, by the way, but then went to Nike. They got him in there and it worked. So they went, okay, we'll do it with Tiger Woods and we'll do it with this guy and we'll do it with that guy. Adidas did the same and picked players, David Beckham, whoever. So the marketing the strength of the marketing of a brand for football boots or basketball shoes or whatever becomes so hard that it just becomes about the individual. So, you know, we all know Ronaldo and Messi are generating huge amounts of cash for, you know, Barcelona or Juventus. So it became about that. And then when Leicester City came along and won the league with a team, I think it kind of changed a bit. I mean, I know Vardy was one of the stars there and stuff, but you see now what's happened is the individual is all important when it comes to the marketing. However, Jurgen Klopp's created a team.
Yeah.
And that's why they're so good. Pep Guardiola's created a team.
Yeah.
So
and Lampard.
Yep, Lampard's creating a team.
Do you feel that there's a better team spirit under Lampard than there was?
I just think with football, it's about finding something to support. And that's the important thing. It's not just about winning. It's supporting something. And now we can support Tammy and Mason and all the players who's coming through and Frank. It's great because you can look at all the players and go, yeah, we support these guys because they're ours and they feel like ours. And so it's not, you don't care whether they win or lose. You just want to support them and get behind them and you're happier for them. The other thing which has changed in football, just quickly, is with the lack of contact now, that I've noticed that the game has now just become about speed.
Yeah.
And I was speaking to someone recently who was telling me this. I don't know if I mentioned it on the podcast before. What they do now with all the kids when they trial them is they just put them on a stopwatch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're just seeing if they're quick. Because you can't, it's not worth the defender tackling because he could get sent off or booked. So it's a lot more of what we used to call back in my day, jockeying, you know, just trying to stay with the player. You want the player to be really quick, like Raheem Sterling. So then you want your defenders to be quick. And then you think, well, why don't the guys from midfield be quick? So now you've got a game which is used to have slow guys like, I don't know, Teddy Sheringham or someone, you know, slow but a quick, a good mind and skillful feet. Even Gazza was pretty slow.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they're not going to exist. It's like quick because they can't be tackled. It's speed, speed, speed. And the game has changed dramatically. The fast break and everything else is speed. Whether that's a good thing, I don't know.
Makes it quite exciting. One of those games where it's really end-to-end and, you know, because someone else is pushing up, they leave a break at the back and then you get a fast break and then they do it the other way. I've been finding it quite exciting.
I love it. I hated tiki-taka football. That was the thing I despised the most. So it's all good. Right. Time for some pearls of wisdom, life hacks, things they don't teach.
I think
you
we've just run out of tape, Tim.
No way. Hey, do we still have a jingle for this?
Yes, we have. Don't we? It's the punky
new one.
It's the punky one.
Brilliant. Okay, cue the jingle.
Pearls of wisdom and life hacks. Not advice and not quite facts. Heed my words, don't listen to Tim. You might end up just like him.
Okay, three words, random words. They're given to me, and then I have to create a beautiful pearl of wisdom out of them. And I've come up trumps again today. The first word.
You certainly are a clam.
The first word is fly. And I thought about this, and I thought a fly is a great example of life. A house fly lives for 28 days only. What if that house fly gets stuck in a butcher's window? What a waste of life. It went searching for adventure and now it's stuck. Make sure you're not stuck. If you are, don't keep banging your head against the window. Stop, look for the butcher. Stop it. If you are, don't keep banging your head against the window. Stop, look for the butcher shop door and escape to a new life. I think that's a great metaphor.
It's not.
Yeah, it is. A housefly only has 28 days. You see a housefly stuck in a butcher's shop window, you think, oh my God, that poor fly. If he's there for a couple of days, that's a lot of his life just spent in a window, banging his head against the window, going, I want to get out, I want to get out, I want to get out.
I don't know if the butcher's shop analogy, it would be as good as something without meat in it, because that's where the fly is going to go.
What do you mean? Right, so we're all attracted to the meat. This is the idea of it. So you're attracted to something which potentially could be bad for you.
Trying to do some sort of subtle vegan propaganda?
No. All right. Yeah. All right. No. Look, here's a human example of the fly. So you're in a relationship.
Jeff Goldblum.
You're in a relationship. I met Jeff. He came on my show.
He did.
Nice bloke.
I bet.
Really good. He's so engaged. And attentive and would do everything. So you're in a relationship and the relationship's crappy. Okay. So you're stuck in this relationship and it's crappy. And it's basically you're banging your head against the window. You haven't got a lot of life left and you're doing it. You're not happy. You know you're not happy, but you're too scared to leave it because it's just, you think, this is it. This is my life. I watched this. Oh God, I was in a lift the other day. And this man went, when we go to the, should we do that? And this woman just turned around. They were an older couple, probably in their 70s or 80s or something. And she turned around and went, would you just shut up? And I thought, oh, and he went, yeah, sorry. And I thought, wow, that's their whole of their life where they hate each other. And they were of that generation where you don't split up. And so they are that fly in the butcher's shop window. They came together. They went for the spoils together. They both went for the meat. Whatever they went for, and now they're stuck banging their head against the window. Don't be that fly. The next word is, don't laugh. The next word is fight. Unless you're a boxer or an MMA star, actually having a fight is a really bad idea. It's become irrelevant in modern society. The downsides far outweigh the upsides. Society's decreed it's no longer acceptable, so no good can come of it. In the good old days, Mark, you go back to the 50s or the 40s or the 20s or something.
When they still had butcher shops.
When they had butcher shops. And you were like, you know, oh, that guy's annoying me. And you go, ooh, and you give him a knuckle sandwich or, you know, ooh, a bunch of fives or whatever. And you smack him and you go, let's sort out our problems. I don't like the way you're looking at me. Roll your sleeves up. And then go, let's go to the car park. No cars, whether. Let's go outside the pub and let's roll our sleeves up. And then, by the way.
I'll finish your thoughts in.
Remind me I not got to ask you something. It was a spoiler for 1917. But remind me I've got to ask you something afterwards. Something that I thought, that's not right. That couldn't have been happening in 1917.
Was it the plane?
No.
Right.
No, it's something else. A bell. So where was I? Oh, yeah, fight. So you roll your sleeves up and you'd have a fight.
They had bells in 1917.
Yeah, I know they had bells in 1917. I'll tell you afterwards. But you could have a little 50 cuffs with someone and everyone in the town would go, oh, they sorted out their problems like men. So we're told. Nowadays, it's such a bad idea to do that because A, you never know who you're picking a fight with in the first place. And B, the chances of you getting in trouble for it are so high. It's such a stupid idea. No one respects you for doing it either. So it's not like, oh, Mark, he's a big, strong lad. No one's going to fight him. that's not the way we work now.
There'd like, always be someone who could beat you up.
Yeah,
it?
But it's also now Mark's a good guy because he's done some art. He's created something. He's got some cash. That's how we value people now, not how we're to fight. So fighting is a really bad idea. I actually met this girl once and she was telling me about her brother and her poor brother. I say poor brother. He was going to be a rugby player and he was quite good, you know. Mm-hmm. He was getting to, the case was he got a bit drunk one night and outside nightclub like everyone does, got in a bit of a tussle with a guy, smashed him, the guy fell over, banged his head and died.
Yeah.
And you do hear this story quite often because drunk people fall down and then they bang their heads, and it's not necessarily the punch which does it, it's the, and then you're in trouble because you've just, I don't know, is it manslaughter for that? I'm not, whatever it is, I don't know. And then that's it. And it wasn't so much that his career was over because the club went, no. It was because he was mentally struggled with the idea that he'd punch someone and he'd kill them. So, you know, no good comes of fighting. There you go. That's the word fight. And the final one is...
oh, my God, I'm joking.
Lizards.
Oh, shit.
Lizards. Lizards are reptiles. Some reptiles don't even bother killing their food before they start getting digested. Most animals spend most of their day trying not to be eaten by something. So be grateful every day that you're not being eaten alive.
We are low, man, down by the system.
I called you a snake.
You called me a snake the other day.
Because you're eating once a week or something.
No, I'm not.
Like a,
no,
like
I'm not.
Snake. This is interesting that most things on the planet are trying to stay alive most days, whether you're a vegetable or an animal or something. Everything's trying to eat everything out there. And I think we've moved so far away from nature, we don't realise that once we were going to be food for sharks. Well, we weren't really swimming, were we? Well, I suppose so. Bears, wolves, lions, all those that, things, snakes, were predators for us, and they were all trying to eat us and stuff. And now we've managed to move away. Actually, people are still getting eaten by things, aren't they? But generally, we don't have to worry about death at all. And I think we've been moved so far away from it. I think you know, when you're sitting there, it's in you. I'm struggling to convince myself on this one.
No, but, I could feel it tapering off. But, what I might do is just fade you out and just start playing the music.
It's new year, people doing their affirmations, aren't they? And you're often told at the end of a day, always write down what you're grateful for. Just start every day.
I wasn't eaten alive by a giraffe.
I wasn't eaten. And what's more, I wasn't eaten alive, which is often what, like a snake and reptiles. I saw this horrible video the other day. I don't know why I started following this thing called Nature is Metal or something. Have you followed that ever on Instagram?
No,
you don't do Instagram, do you? And there was like this water buffalo and it was stuck and this like Komodo monitor dragon thing, like a lizard thing, one of those big, great big lizards, just walked up to it, took a bite out of it. It was still alive, but it was stuck. And then just wandered off. And and then came back later and took another bite. And you're like going, for God's sake, kill it first. But they don't care. They just, they've got no feelings. That's why I think it's really weird when people keep lizards and stuff going, oh, he's got a good personality. No, it hasn't. You're projecting your personality. I'll get letters now. But you're projecting what you think its personality is onto it. Lizards don't care. They just want to eat food. They're not conscious. They're just like, I'm surviving. I'm eating. And they can go, like snakes can go missing for...
People learn nothing from Godzilla.
Yeah, exactly right, Mark. Exactly right.
Let that be the lesson of the day.
My new self-help book, Mark, it's going to be Stop Moaning, You're Not Being Eaten. That's got to be a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah. In brackets, alive.
Alive, yeah. And you're not being eaten alive. That'll be the follow-up. All right, that's it for this week's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. Lots of nonsense on here. Maybe some pieces of advice that you thought were good. Maybe some you didn't. If you want to contact us, please get your letters in, whether you like the guests or whether you've got any problems or anything else. The email address is tim.lo... no, it's not.
You don't need to do it anymore, Tim. It's at the end.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We've got a jingle. But please get them in. Send stuff in. Anyway, that's it for the time being. Peace and love, Joy.
Bye. Thank you for listening to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, written and hosted by Tim Lovejoy and produced by Mark Augustine.
If you would like to contact us, then our email address is dearlovejoypodcast@gmail.com. Or Tim is on Twitter @TimLovejoy and on Instagram @TimLovejoy_official.